We welcome you to another live edition of the Sports Box, brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And by our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and check them out at www.crowdplayapp.com for details. Ladies and gentlemen, it's showtime.
Hey everybody, welcome to Cage My IQ. I am your host, D-Big. Joining with me, as always, my co-host, Miles Long. No, how's it going, Miles?
I'm all right. Got my second COVID shot today, and you'll see that's the one that makes you feel all sick and shit. I feel all right. I'm just really tired. I don't know if that's a side effect or what, but I'm a little off today.
No, that's what happened to me Thursday. I took the rest of the day Thursday once I got the shot to just relax, and then by Friday I was good to go.
Well, all right. Hopefully there's a quick bounce back then. Hopefully it won't screw with me too much, but we'll see.
It won't screw with you too much as what happened Saturday. without crazy UFC 261 was.
Oh, yeah. That was a big one.
Exactly. As you know, today we will be recapping how short UFC 261 was. So this is our UFC 261 recap show. As you know, not one fight on the main card made it past round two, and then we had two medical stoppages. So it went not anything crazier for the first live crowd in about a year.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It was a big returning crowd in Florida, yep. I think. Wasn't it Florida?
It was Jacksonville, Florida. Yep.
Yeah, that's why like nobody was wearing a mask.
Exactly. But before I get started with that, we had some news, of course. First, I wanted to talk to you about the whole Daniel Cormier, Jake Paul incident there where Daniel Cormier came over to him and they're basically chit-chatting back and forth. And then you see Daniel Cormier go over there and he had to be restrained from security, because it looked like he was getting ready to do something, but I think knowing that he was on the job, I think that's why he didn't do anything.
Right.
I want to get your opinion on that.
Actually, the Jake Paul thing seems to be like the gift that just keeps on fucking giving. Like it's always something. So there's been a whole bunch of controversy. The Daniel Cormier one was one thing, and then there was like a whole other thing where now Triller, the company that was sponsoring it, went ahead and filed a lawsuit against a bunch of streamers for like $100 million in damages or some shit. Like it's fucking crazy. But I mean, I don't know. There's a whole bunch of insanity. Now, from what I hear, Jake Paul and Daniel Cormier were like already kind of beefing before the event even came up in like social media or something. And then Daniel Cormier said something about like, oh, if I see him again, I'm going to smack him. And he had like a little bit there at the end after the fights were over. He was explaining like what happened. I didn't really hear it because, you know, it was noisy and we were doing like wrap up stuff on the stream. But basically what I heard was he was saying that like he went over there to like he was like pointing at Jake Paul like, don't mess with me. Just fucking stay in your place or whatever. And then I guess they got like into a heated conversation or something. And now I think Jake Paul's trying to leverage that into some kind of fight with Cormier, but Cormier's come out openly saying that he won't fight Jake Paul in anything other than MMA. So he's not going to go into a boxing ring or none of that bullshit. If he wants to fight, he has to do it MMA style. I mean, this is just a whole bunch of weirdness surrounding this whole fucking event, but that's the Daniel Cormier piece that I've heard of it. Yeah. And then there was that whole, like, everybody got chanting in the prelims. Jake Paul sucks.
And it seems
fucking funny.
It seems like what everybody is saying that Jake Paul's trying to turn from a bad guy to good guy because he made the comment to Dana White about how about you pay your fighters more? Maybe they're start getting paid more than boxers or get more recognition. Yeah. Which he is true, but the way he's used it, I think it's just to make himself look better. if that makes sense.
I think he's probably trying to do some sort of crowd control, because that was one of the other pieces to this story. It's not really related to this, but there was a guy, I forget, it's like Pete something. He was one of the Jackass dudes. Like, he did Jackass, and then when that kind of like fizzled, they all kind of went their separate ways. Like, Steve-O went and did his thing. This was one of the guys who was involved, and he went and did his own thing. Apparently his own thing is like online journalism of some stripe, or maybe it's like YouTube news or something. I don't know. But he went, he was apparently in charge of the press coverage for the Jake Paul Ben Askren fight. And he was kind of a giant dick to Jake Paul during the time he was supposed to be interviewing him. But he brought up some like some good points. He was like, hey, so there's like two or three outstanding sexual assault allegations against Jake Paul. He's got a few other criminal charges, or he was caught with, I think it was like illegal firearms in his house, but that never went anywhere. And so he was like asking him about it and shit like that. And I think after that, Jake Paul went on like a talk show or a podcast or something saying like, oh, that guy's never going to fucking cover our events again. He fucked it up. So imagine after that bad press. He's probably trying to do some kind of damage control, because that's pretty bad. That's sexual allegations. That's real bad. Can't be raping people, Jake Paul. Can't be doing that.
We got somebody chiming in, a Facebook user. It says Jake Paul can knock out Usman.
Probably not.
Got 2 cents. Sup D, sup Miles. What's going on? 2 cents.
What's going on?
He went on earlier. He usually goes on a couple of days a week. I didn't get a chance to go on as I usually do, because my kids were driving me crazy. But you can always find him on like on weird times during the day, 2-3 hours, ranting about the fights. He's pretty good knowledge wise. And so check him out on Just My 2 Cents on YouTube. So definitely check him out. But and then we got somebody else saying, Miles, you kind of look like Kevin Owens on WWE.
I'm gonna Google that.
Nice,
you get a visual.
Yeah.
Okay, I can kind of see it a little bit. It's the beard and the short hair. That's what it is. I don't have like a faux hawk yet, though. It's not quite that long.
Yeah, but I definitely agree a bunch of what you just said. It's just crazy how, to me, I know he has a big reach on YouTube, but it's crazy how like he goes from that to then doing boxing, and he's drawing in like $500,000 paychecks just by doing boxing being a YouTuber.
It's also because his brother went before him. Like, this wasn't his idea. Logan Paul broke it in, and then it turns out it makes a bunch of money, because what he did is he pulled his fan base from YouTube to watch the fights and shit. So they were like, oh shit, we can get a huge amount of turnout and pay-per-views and shit like that. So they figured out it's a money-making business. Yeah. And so over time, Jake Paul's like, oh, I should probably get into that too, you know? And there's also like a component to this, where this is 100% a fucking ego project, no question. But you know, at the end of the day, if it makes him more money, then fucking he'll do it. He's got all the money he needs right now, so he's at the point where he just spends money to make more money at this point. So.
Yeah, we got a couple of people jumping the gun, but we got Sam from MMA Group saying Dominic Reyes versus Yuri Prochazka. Who you got? D and Miles, what round and how? Hi from Twitter V, by the way. And then you got my buddy Insight saying, stunned by KO, not by the W. I get what he did there. Nice. But Sam, I got Reyes by a second round knockout. That's what I got, and I'll stick by it.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't know. I do like Reyes. I do like Reyes. I actually was pulling for Reyes in the Yahovich fight. I haven't really seen much out of Prochazka, so like, gut feeling, just looking at rankings, looking at like history and stats, I'd go with Reyes, but that's before I've really done any decent research on Prochazka. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt.
Definitely agree. But you can definitely tune in on Thursday to my fight night preview for this, to catch more my input on the whole card right there with six fights. There's a couple of underrated fights on it, but definitely a weaker card, definitely compared to what we're about to get.
I mean, how do you follow that? what kind of card do you put together that's going to follow that? You know,
you're not. Okay. You're gonna have a bunch of up and comers on this one. Who hope at least one of them do good, and then you're getting to May where you got a pretty good amount of cards with good matchups on there. Each card has a really good main event, in my opinion. But Sam also said you should watch Prochaska's time in Ryzen, Nemkov fight, Brexen fight as well. That would tell you something, in my opinion. I'll check out the Nemkov one, definitely.
I got a UFC Fight Pass. I can watch all the things. Yeah. It's awesome. Fucking UFC Fight Pass. That's where it's at.
I'm not knocking Prochaska. I'm just going off of what I know of Dominic Reyes. And usually he comes back good off of a loss, especially on the one that he had with that. He basically had a great fight, in a bad loss by the judges to Jones, and then he just shit the bed against in his last fight. So, which I don't even want to talk about, but just my two cents said super necessary.
Hammer fist.
Speaking of that, I don't know if you heard today, not to veer off, but they overturned Eddie Alvarez's DQ and made it a no contest.
Really?
Today. Hmm. Yeah, I was doing my homework for one on TNT this Wednesday, and then I came across the article on one. They had released it literally 10 minutes before I started do my notes, and they had said that they would decide they were going to overturn the decision. So instead of a DQ, it's going to be a no contest.
Which
is good. They actually did what was needed, because it definitely wasn't intentional. It was accidental, and he moved his head when he started when the ref told him, You gotta watch the head. Then he watched the head, and he moved in more towards his face, and then that's when he moved his head like this. So it's like you can definitely tell it was incidental, and Yuri caused it to happen. So I'm glad for that. So maybe he'll come into Wednesday's fight a little bit less angrier. So since he's fighting this Wednesday.
Oh no shit! All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see.
Yep. But let's get started with this recap. It probably won't be as long because there's not much to talk about. Like I said in the beginning, and no fight went past round two. In fact, no fight really went past a round and a half, I should say, which is crazy.
We can do a recap in like 18 seconds.
Yeah, I got my boy Bobby chiming in, D-Bake. We just went to PJ's yesterday to watch a little bit of baseball and then drink and then hang out, so which was good. So he's thanks to him for chiming in. But let's get into the first fight on the card. We had a light heavyweight matchup where Anthony Smith defeated Jimmy Crute by first round TKO, aka medical injury, right there. As you can see in this, Anthony Smith was he was less of the aggressor in the matchup, contrary to the picture, but he hit more significant strikes than Jimmy Crute, and then one of them being one of the last leg kicks that he was able to connect on to the side of Crute's leg in the last minute. And I'll get to the picture in a second, but the detail. Of the details of the fight. But
okay, I thought you were going to show the ankle.
No, definitely not going to show the ankle. But oh, God. He tried to. The end of the first round happened, and then he tried to get up and get ready to go. But the medical examiner came over and looked at his leg because he was hobbling and was like, you can't go. And then they had to call it off. I want to get your opinion on the first round of this fight, because that's what happened.
The only round. Yeah. I mean, it sucks because, like, this was gearing up to be a pretty good fight. You had both guys coming out, and they were trading back and forth a little, you know. It looked like at the beginning, Anthony Smith was firing off a little bit more than Crute, but right around like the 2 minute mark or so in the round, Crute was coming back. Like he was an out, you know, he was getting his rhythm. He was getting his groove in. His movement was getting better. He was landing some good shots. And then that fucking leg kick happened. And that's the thing, even with the, whatever the fuck happened to his ankle, he still kept going. You know, he was like, ah, fuck it, I can't stand, so we're going to grapple. So he wrestled with him and did the best he could. And for the most part, he really was kind of dominating there at the end with the wrestling and the groundwork. But, I mean, yeah, you can't keep fighting when, if you're walking around the ring, your fucking leg is like slipping off to the side, like the bone that's supposed to be attached to your ankle is like, nope, it's just slipping over. And it looks like it's like, it's fucking nasty. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's pretty bad, but that was unfortunate. That was unfortunate. Too bad we didn't get to see how that one played out. Maybe we'll get a rematch, because that one, relative to the other injuries that night, was not that serious, again, relatively speaking. So hopefully he'll make a quick recovery, and we'll get to see him again. Maybe this fight might get rebooked. We can see what would actually happen if they let it go.
Yeah, like it wasn't too bad. It was just, there's been several reports. One that I've read, that one, it hit a, like when he hit the leg, he hit a nerve, and that's what was causing the issues. And then there was another report that came out that said that he ruptured his knee or busted his knee open, which would be weird because he hit him in the leg.
They were even showing, like, on camera, it was, the ankle was, like, slipping, and it was really strange. Like, the way it was, I'm trying to find a picture so I can paint a word picture for you guys, but all that's coming up is Chris Weidman.
but let me bring the stats up here for the round that we had. If you can see right here, the total strikes, Anthony Smith had 27 of 40. And Jimmy Crute had 34 to 57. So Jimmy Crute was definitely the one that was doing more of the work. What got it, and then what's crazy with the win because of the leg kick, Anthony Smith had 20 of 32 headshots, and then Crute had 7 of 21.
Yeah.
Smith had 4 of 5 body shots, and then Crute had 2 of 5. What's crazy is Jimmy Crute had 9 of 9 leg shots, so he connected on every leg kick that he did.
I mean, yeah, they were just standing and firing, so I mean, I could see that, but like, I think what it was Anthony Smith was coming out harder at the beginning.
Yeah,
that's where he added up on the cards, because really it wasn't until, you know, that 2 minute mark when Crute started returning fire more aggressively. And then it was like 30 seconds until that fucking leg injury happened, and then the striking pretty much stopped.
So. Yeah, but if you look at it, he had only 2, but it was that last one that did the damage. That somehow, I don't know how bad. Like, I don't know if it was like that the pinky toe of it just hit enough of the nerve to where it fucked everything up. I don't know what it was, but
it's very strange. I'm looking at it now. It's like, He didn't quite hit the knee, it looks like. Here, let me show you what I'm looking at. He got it a little off kilter on the knee. It looks like it's a little high for a knee shot.
Yeah.
And what he ended up doing, it looks like he kind of almost buckled the ankle down here a little bit over. You see that? And then I'm not sure what, like, if that completely displaced this joint. Because he just couldn't stand after that. They don't show him trying to walk.
I remember he did it. He tried to walk, and then he kind of fell down.
His leg wouldn't even stay steady.
Then he was getting back up as the whirlwind went for round one, and then he walked over, he wanted to keep going. So it looked like it hits the back of the knee.
The knee joint. Yeah. So he was a little high, but also the leg or the foot kind of wrapped around to the back a little bit.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even necessarily like a totally plush knee shot. It may have been how he kind of distributed the weight from trying to like defend against the kick that ended up really doing more of the damage. You can't really see that. No, that's okay. Not even the right thing. Oh wait. Oh shit! Yeah. Okay. Now you can kind of see that. Oof. That looks nasty. Like, you can see the bottom of his foot from this angle. We should not be seeing that much of that foot. Oh boy. Yeah, that's real bad.
That's tough. That's tough. Yeah.
Oh man, that sucks. That sucks. But well, there you go. That's everything you need to know that happened in that fight. That's the whole thing. We didn't get to the second round, so you know, not much to recap.
Other than the fight we're gonna get ready for, and not the next one, the one after is the only other one that reached us far. So, this was sent up. Before that shot, this was set up, in my opinion, to be a very good fight because they're going back and forth. And just like you said, Anthony Smith started strong, and then Jimmy Crute came in, and it just unfortunate for Crute that one leg kick did him in by medical stoppage. They put in TKO, but it's like the ref wouldn't let him continue because he wanted to continue. The ref decided that it wasn't going to be a smart move because he was kind of hobbling. And
that was a good call for the ref, though. I think that was the right call. That was,
exactly. So I hope they run it back. That's what I hope happens. I hope they run it back when it gets fine. And then you can actually have like a good fight out of it because to have it stopped by a medical stoppage like that sucks.
Yeah, man.
For both parties involved. Not as much as this matchup that we're getting into, not as much as this one.
Oh boy!
Because in the second matchup on this card, we had a middleweight fight where Uriah Hall, without throwing a single punch, had defeated Chris Weidman by first round TKO.
Yep.
In parentheses, injury, just like before. Literally, this lasted 17 seconds.
God damn!
And just like there, you see before all that. All that happened was Chris Weidman threw a leg kick and it got checked by Ryan Hall. And then I'll let you finish the rest.
I mean, this is like some weird karma come full circle shit. Only other time I remember this happening was Anderson Silva in the Weidman fight, the second one. And then now it's Weidman shoes on the other foot kind of shit. Very strange. But I mean, he connected at a real bad angle, and he got it kind of looked. Let me see if I can find just before the foot broke, because it's real easy to find after the foot broke. It's before that's a little tougher. Okay, yeah, I kind of see the angle here. So he didn't actually hit the knee. He hit kind of high up on the shin, probably like 3 inches below the knee. So like that nice little tough part of the shin, but it doesn't even look like Uriah Hall was turning into it. Like usually that's how you want to check kicks, especially if you think they're going to like the thigh level, you got to turn in so it gets the meaty part of your thigh instead of the part with the nerves on it. But I guess Hall thought it was more of like a calf kick situation. So he just kind of grounded himself and, you know, set into his stance more. And man, Weidman just caught the wrong part of his shin and just went all floppy and shit. And it was like it's like if you took one of those case sausages, emptied it out a little bit, then put like a toothpick in there and then broke the toothpick. That's pretty much what happened. But that's pretty much it. It was just over at after that. He tried to land on that back foot. It just folded over like an empty pant leg. And that was it. That was the whole fight. The whole 18 seconds. Jesus Christ.
Which is crazy because like I was looking forward to this one and then I'm like, one kick, that's it. Like I thought the first fight where I was like, okay, medical stoppage after the first round, this is weird. Nothing's gonna get weirder than how that did. And then this was like, let me one up you for say, because that's basically what happened. They got one upped by this one man. Kick, and then it was over. Like Uriah, like all you had to do was look at Uriah Hall's reaction. It happened. He looked, and then he walked away. Like he was
like, "Fuck!"
He was like, "Fuck!" Like you know, like he's gonna come out victorious without doing a thing, and then literally he could be booked right away. Like literally, you could book him for a fight in the next 3 to 4 weeks because nothing happened to him. Nothing.
He's good to go.
It took a leg check and that's it. And I feel like they could book him and then book him versus, I think him versus Darren Till, because Till got forced out of his fight. So he's going to look for a fight. And then that's kind of in that range where Uriah Hall is going to look to fight. Like, I know that when you look at the thing tomorrow, there's a chance that they might not like move Uriah Hall up anything because he didn't do anything. But at the same time, he did get a victory. So
I mean, he was already ahead anyway, so it wouldn't even make sense to move him up. He was already in the ninth spot. Weidman was 11, and then Weidman basically beat himself. So, I mean, does he even really deserve to be moved down? I mean, he's probably going to not be in the rankings. He's probably going to have to retire. That's a career-ending injury a lot of the time. Like, holy shit. But I don't see why Uriah Hall would have to move down or move up at all. Like, he just kind of showed up. He got paid and then went home. That was pretty much it. He just came to collect the check.
Exactly. But I wish him the best of recovery. He had his surgery yesterday.
I didn't hear about that.
They posted a picture of it. It went well. So I can only imagine how long the recovery is. But it was nice to see on social media that Anderson Silva who posted something about hoping for a speedy recovery. I wouldn't be surprised in some sort of like hidden language with like negative 50 font size where it said, this is what happens for this happening to me.
He's still big salt. He's still big salt about that.
Oh my God. And that was far long ago that was, but yeah, that's basically, the rest of this, we won't go too much into that since it was 17 seconds.
Yeah, like what do you even do with that?
But going from that into probably the longest fight on the fight card, we had the first title fight of the evening, which was a women's flyweight title fight matchup between Valentina Shevchenko, who defeated Jessica Andrade by second round TKO. What are your opinions on this matchup?
I mean, that's pretty much what I thought was going to happen. Valentina Shevchenko just kind of rules over the flyweights, and there's really nobody who can be a decent challenge. Like, I mean, if Andrade couldn't do it, then, you know, that means Shevchenko's just going to hold on to that belt for a while. Like, that's pretty much how that goes down. Or she gives it up, and then there's, like, an actual chance that someone else can have it. But, I mean, this was, pretty much what I was expecting for sure. It's like, you can't stand and strike with Valentina Shevchenko. You can't wrestle with her. You can't really do much on the ground. And that's pretty much what happened to Andrade. She kind of started with the stand-up, and then very quickly, Shevchenko just kind of took over. She was like, nope. She was getting her in the jabs and the power shots, throwing in some nice kicks. But she was also mixing in a decent amount of wrestling. She was very good at transitioning from like these big heavy strikes and creating openings to like take the back, get her in body locks, and we saw some beautiful throws in the first round and stuff like that. Which she have like 4 or 5 different takedowns. It was a pretty dominant performance. You got to see a little bit of everything. You got to see her striking, got to see her wrestling ability, and then she finished it out with some ground game, doing that topside crucifix. And just fucking just beat the shit out of Andrade until the ref decided, all right, she's had enough. which is interesting. Like, you're supposed to let it go until they don't put up a defense, like until there's no cogent defense. What cogent defense can you put up when you're in a fucking a topside crucifix? The reason you use that position is so that the other person can't defend. Like, all your weapons are tied up. You can't do shit. You're like, that's the end of the fight right there. Like, she was trying to like buck her off and stuff, but that's not gonna happen. Come on. I think the ref was just being like kind of a dick. It's like, let's see what she can do. It's like, what is she gonna do? The fight's over. As soon as Valentina sunk in that topside crucifix, the fight was over. There was nothing else that Andrade could do. But so that was pretty much exactly what I thought it was gonna be. I'm wondering who's gonna try to challenge her next. I've no idea who's foolish enough to try to take that belt. They might. I know Chookagan's doing a thing. Isn't she fighting somebody soon?
I can look this up right now.
I'm pretty sure I saw her going up soon, but like, she would be the number two spot. But there's no way Chookagan wins. Like, there's no fucking way.
They probably would just put it in there just because she needs a fighter, like somebody to fight.
Yeah.
I'm on Tapology right now. She is scheduled to face Vivian Araujo on the 15th of May.
Number 7 spot. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, so then Lauren Murphy wouldn't win either, but Lauren Murphy's also booked for a thing. Jennifer Maia, is she booked? I think she's booked, isn't she?
She is booked. Let me find out. I'm looking right now who she's supposed to be booked. This is what's great about having Tapology. She's Jessica I on July 10th.
Okay, and then that leaves us with Cynthia Carvillo.
I think she'll put up a good showing, but yeah, she wouldn't be favored on anything, of course. And she's coming off a loss to Chu Kagan anyway. Yep. If she would have won that, Cynthia Calviola would have been a good spot there. But it's like, you're looking at it, it's like, who are you going to pit against her? Let me remove this for a second, because here's the stats on the fight as we speak right now. Let me get this back up. But right there, this was actually the striking was pretty even up until the point where she pinned her down in the second round and she landed those 40 plus shots that you were talking about. But you had Valentina Shevchenko. She landed 90 of 97 strikes, which is absurd how high her accuracy is with that. Whereas Andrade landed 47 of 55. Shevchenko had 32 significant strikes, 27 of them being head, 3 body, and 2 legs. And then you had Andrade, who had 10 significant strikes with 2 being head, 8 body, and then no legs. But the big thing here is 5 minutes and 11 seconds of control time on the ground. And she had 7 takedowns, which is crazy. Oh, sure. And this is what you expected Andrade to do, because she's known for the wrestling. But this is what Shevchenko did to Andrade. So the game plan to go after Shevchenko is what wind up beating Andrade, which is kind of poetic justice in itself, because she was talking about, I got to use the wrestling. I got to take her down. That's a weakness. And even I barred into it. I barred into it.
Fucking sucker.
Because I'm like, this is the fight where there will be a underdog that wins this. And boy, was I wrong. She got completely dominated. Like, unless it's Nunez facing her, I'm not betting against her now. Unless it's Amanda Nunez, I am not betting against Shevchenko anymore. Not at all. This is proof right here. Like, this is the one person that I thought, okay, she'll be the best chance. I do think that in the future, like we talked about on Saturday, that maybe Miranda Maverick will be able to be a good challenger to her, but she needs more time. She needs a couple of fights to get into that spot. And hopefully by that time, Shevchenko will have cleaned out a couple more guinea pigs, so if you want to call it that. But this was pretty clear cut. She dominated this, and I don't know what's left for her to face. I'll even go into the UFC rankings again and look.
Yeah, there's nobody here who would win, because after the number 5 spot, you've got Calderwood, good striker, would not do well against the wrestling or the ground stuff. You got Jessica I in the number 8 spot. She's already booked, but I mean, Jessica I is more about trying to control the fight than finish it. Shevchenko can finish it, you know, pretty much however she wants to.
I would be interested, even though she's 10, I'd be interested to see her face Alexa Grasso. That'd be pretty interesting.
I mean, Grasso does good volume, but I think she would just get broken down against the power. Cause I think she would definitely outstrike Shevchenko in terms of number of total strikes, but when Shevchenko connects, it just would cost her way, way more than vice versa. So, I mean, she would probably just break her down more systematically. And again, she's still got the wrestling to fall back on. Even if that's not working, yeah. She's still got lots of avenues to
well,
work around.
Well, that's where I'd be interested to see Alexa Grasso, because she's not a wrestler, but she's not a grappler. She's a grappler. She's one of the best submission artists. And I think maybe she could find a hole and get like that shock and submission.
Seemed, last time I remember her, if I'm remembering the right fight, she's a bottom side specialist where she's looking for submissions on the bottom. You can't do that against Shevchenko. There's no way. She's because that sambo wrestling, man. That sambo wrestling. It's a whole new breed of wrestling. If you let them on top, you just let them have their way. They're like, oh, good. This is exactly what I wanted. You're like, but wait, I have jiu-jitsu. They're like, that doesn't matter. Get your jiu-jitsu out here, bitch. That's not what this game is. Come on.
We got Leslie, coming. Hi, all.
What's going on?
The queen of the MMA group that we're in. Then we got my boy Alex chiming in with the fist emoji. Thanks for tuning in. But yeah, like this is Shevchenko's word, and all of them is just living in it. That's what I'm gonna say. Yeah, that's like if it wasn't for Amanda Nunes, we'd be talking about Valentina Shevchenko being the best women's fighter of them all. It's crazy to think that right now we don't have just one, but we have two pound for pound great women's fighters right now. Everybody was like, oh my god, Ronda Rousey in her time, she was good.
I remember that.
She would just do the judo throw into the armbar and beat people until she had to face those strikers. Kind of like what I thought about with Brock Lesnar until he had to face – he would face the grapplers all the time or low-key people. And then you would actually pin somebody good at striking against him, and then he would struggle. Mm. Same thing with Ronda Rousey. But this is like the new breed. Shevchenko and Nunes, they can do it all. And then it's great. And then to think they've already fought each other twice.
Yeah, but three times already. Thought they had a trilogy.
Two, both times won by Nunes. The one was a controversy because people think that.
I remember that one was that was like a weird thing that happened.
But the second one was all Nunes. It was all her. I would like to see a trilogy. I'd be all about that. But if I was Shevchenko and I was doing a trilogy, I'd be doing everything I could to win it because I don't want to have this career and then be like, I lost to Nunes three times.
Well, I mean, Nunes is the only woman in the division or in the whole women's division to double belt. So, I mean, if you're going to lose to somebody, you may as well lose to her. That's the least embarrassing.
But here's the question. Say they win it a third time. Mm. And Shevchenko wins. Mm-hmm. Do they run it back a fourth time? Because then it'd be 2-1 Nunes.
I mean, it depends, I guess. I mean, what weight class would they be fighting in, I think? Because I think that would matter, right? Like, I think if Nunes came down to flyweight and then lost, I don't think she'd care. She'd be like, fuck it, whatever. I still got the other two divisions. Yeah. But if Shevchenko went up, then I think we'd probably see another one.
Because then you're going into uncharted territories where you're like, oh, she won. And then say she won again. You'd be looking at a fucking five-fight war there to decide who's better.
It's like the Fast and Furious franchise, but for MMA, basically. They just keep churning them out. They're like, fuck it. Let's best out of 13. Like,
let's just do whatever we can. But I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen in that division. It's either she's going to lose to somebody shockingly, like you don't expect no one really expected Holly Holm to beat Ronda Rousey when she did. And then you actually saw who Holly Holm was. No one knew who Holly Holm was until she beat her. It was just, oh, she's next. Because Ronda Rousey beat. Then we saw who Holly Holm was. But
I mean, it was kind of if it wasn't Holly Holmes, it was going to be somebody because at that point, you know, Ronda Rousey was great, but then I think she kind of like, one, she stuck to the same game plan for way too long. Because at first it was the arm bars. Then people were like, oh, I just learned how to defend the arm bar and she won't do that anymore. And so she's like, shit, I don't have the arm bar anymore. And so she went to the judo stuff real hardcore. tried to mix in different submissions. People were like, oh, if I just defend the judo stuff, then, you know, that kind of shuts her down. And she's like, shit, now I got to learn how to punch. But that's what undid her right there. She's trying to stand there and punch with Holly Holmes. And was like, no, you're not going to win that. So, yeah. I mean, I think it was a destined decline. And eventually she was going to meet a striker who she just couldn't contend with because the rest of the division was working on neutralizing all of her other weapons. So it's like, you know, what else can you do, really? So if she had been working on her striking the whole time, I think she would have been fine. But unfortunately, she overcommitted to the same strategy for way too long. And it just, that's what shot her in the foot. I think she just kind of became obsolete over time. Yep. So unfortunate, but that's how it goes.
But let me move on from this title fight to the next one, was very shocking to me.
Not because crazy.
like no lie, I'll say this. Bobby, co-host of Fighting Words on Sportsbox, a buddy of ours, came on and did the watch along with us. He literally has he has two clips. He put a clip on of the main event one and reaction that he had, but then his reaction for this finish was just epic. Because first you heard it, then we heard it like 20 seconds later, and it was just complete nuts. And not because it happened, but it was how it happened, which was the shocking part. But
it was a bit of both, actually. It was a little bit of both of those things.
But we had a strawweight title fight. Saw Rose Namajunas defeat the then champion Zhang Weili by first round KO. I'll let you take the floor.
Man, this was insane. This was crazy. First of all, I think everybody thought, you know, Weili Zhang was going to win, but I think people thought that if Rose Namajunas was going to win, it was going to be by submission, because that's really the thing she's got that could potentially pose a threat to Weili Zhang. But that's not how this went at all. It was just a complete reversal, just a complete turning of the tables. We're like, oh, just kidding. Rose Namajunas is going to knock her the fuck out. And it's interesting because that first, like, I don't even know how long this lasts, maybe like a minute and a half, I think, is how far we got into the first round before she got knocked out. But for that entire time, that minute and a half, Weili Zhang was looking really good. She was tagging her. She was moving. She was having some good evasion. She was landing some decent shots. Like, it was pretty much like, all right, yeah, this is what we expected, right? And then just Rose Namajunas just slipped that freaking lead roundhouse kick, just slipped it in past the guard and placed it. It was the placement that really did this, because those front roundhouse kicks, They're a pretty versatile tool if you're in like European American style kickboxing stuff. Typically, you use them to like score your head points and things like that. They're a useful little tool, you know. They're not as powerful as your rear roundhouse, not even close, because of the way the physics works. But every once in a while, you'll get that perfect placement right on the sweet spot of the jaw, and that's exactly what happened. Like, when you look at the kick, it's like it was a strong kick, but it's not like the most powerful kick we've ever seen, right? Like it's a good kick, but I mean, if it had been a little bit lower or even just a little bit higher, I think Weili Zhang could have kind of muscled through that. I think she would have been able to kind of power through, and she would have stayed on her feet.
Yeah.
But it got her right in the sweet spot and just turned the fucking lights out. Like, oh, you know she was out, because when she was standing up and the ref called it, she was like complaining. She was stumbling. She couldn't even walk around correctly as she's complaining. Like, why'd you stop the fight? She's like half falling over. It's like, that's why. That's right there is why he stopped the fight. She wasn't even putting up a defense. She was just kind of, she sat up a little bit. I think that was mostly just kind of like a reaction to falling. You know, you do that much training, you hit the mat, you want to get back up as quick as you can. She was on her way back up. And Namajunas got on top of her and pinned one of the hands, so she couldn't like do a double hand defense. But the hand that wasn't pinned was just sitting on the canvas. It was over. It was no question. But so we're definitely gonna get a rematch here. Definitely gonna see a part two to this. But barring another like wild, you know, fluke puncher's chance in hell that Namajunas can pull out another one of those, I think Wei Li Zhang's going to come back with a vengeance on this rematch. She's pissed. She was so mad. She was so mad. So she's going to make an example out of Nima Junes on that rematch.
But. Well, it was just like I was telling you, like the other day, Nima Junes is not known for the leg kicks. She's not known for doing something like that. So it was the perfect. So it, like when you think about it, it was the perfect time to do it because Wei Li wasn't going to expect it.
Right.
Which, as you see, she didn't really like she kind of saw it coming, but then she didn't. She reacted late to it.
Well, that was the other brilliant part is Nima Junes slipped it in as she was moving. That's how you're supposed to throw kicks, because if you throw them while someone's stationary, they'll just move or defend. But if you can get them in motion towards you, it's very hard to you know, cover your guard, especially when you saw the way that Wei Li Zhang's hands were. It just slipped right in because she was not thinking about like keeping a disciplined guard nice and tight close to her head. Her hands were like over here somewhere and it just went straight through the hole. It was very well executed, but man, if it hadn't been placed the way it was, that oof.
Because before that, if you look at the stats right here, Nima Junes had 5 total strikes. That's it. Yeah. Five significant strikes, and they were all to the head. 5 to the head. I don't know why they haven't updated it, but then you had Wei Li Zhang had 7 significant strikes, which were all the total strikes that she had. She had 1 to the head and then 6 leg kicks to the leg. But she was the one doing more damage. And then as you see, Wei Li's head is red right now, and that's mainly because of that leg kick that she took. To be honest, I believe all the damage was that Rose did was after the leg kick. She did the leg kick, and then she did like the 3 or 4 hammer fists. So basically, she had nothing done until that leg kick.
Yeah,
it was all Wei Li up until that point. But I think, just like you said, she's gonna come out with a vengeance now. She's gonna kind of know, I gotta keep in mind that there was a leg kick that happened to me. I gotta make sure that that doesn't happen again. Because other than that, I was fighting a good fight there. Like, I was the one being aggressive. I'm the one landing shots. And she wasn't really doing too much. It was just she landed that shot. That's what won her the belt. And then good for her. And then Dana White came out and said right in the post-fight presser that they were going to have an immediate rematch. Because the people because there are people online that are like, Wei Li doesn't deserve the rematch. She got hit. And then if you do that, you're going to set a precedent to a lot of people that you just deserve a rematch because she's only fought 6 times in the UFC. And it's like,
oh, get the fuck over it. And Jesus Christ.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, that's why she does deserve it, because she's only been in the UFC for 6 fights and she did all those fights in 6 months. She's a workhorse for the UFC. Then she won the belt, had one of the best fights by ever in the UFC against Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and then came in here and just got caught by surprise. That's what it was. She got caught by surprise.
Oh, this was 100% like a fluke. Yeah. This was a puncher's chance in hell. Just like that infinitesimal 0.1% chance. It just happened.
Yeah.
I mean, this wasn't representative of what an actual 5-round fight would look like.
And it's not saying that Rose isn't a good fighter. She's a great fighter. She's top of the division, but she caught her by surprise. Kind of like Poirier. You didn't think Poirier was ever going to do leg kicks, and then he just went and did it, and then just basically chopped down Conor McGregor.
Well, I mean, that's not even a good comparison because, like, they still fought, right? Like, it was a factor that McGregor didn't see coming, but he was still, like, putting up a fight, and they were going back and forth. This was literally just the placement. The placement of that kick is the only reason she won.
Perfect.
And, again, that's not really something she could replicate. This isn't something she's been doing her whole career where we're like, yeah, that's just what she does. No, it's the opposite. It's like, holy shit, what are the odds? And people are like, no, we want to see, like, an actual fight where, you know, we don't have this, like, one off fluke chance. It was also in the first round. I think that also factors in. It happened so fast, we really didn't get a fight. We just got like Nima Junes getting beat up for a little bit. She threw a lucky kick and that was it. That's not a fight. I'd be upset if there wasn't a rematch.
But that's what happened, and then now, and now we're going to expect a rematch by somewhere at the end of summer. In my opinion, that's what I'm guessing, because we're coming into May now, and my only thought would be if they did it in July, which
Well, didn't they have didn't they have a fight card, like a pay per view fight card that they haven't filled yet?
It's the beginning of August.
Is that like 63, I think, is the one they haven't filled? Or is it 64?
64 is the McGregor Poirier one.
Is that one already fully booked?
For the most part, it is, unless they can add another title fight. But that that's in July.
Yeah, I've only got Poirier and McGregor. At least this is what they've released on the internet. So.
63 is the Figueiredo, Moreno, and then they just added which one did they just add to that?
Adesanya, Vittori. I want to see Vittori. I want to see Adesanya, Whitaker. This is some bullshit. Just bad news today.
tell Whitaker about that, because he's the one who said he needs more time. So,
well, fuck your time. Go fight. I want to see that shit.
even if Vittori fought like the week before or whatever it was, and he's taking the fight. So it's like, how much more time do you need? But I could see it. 264 would be July, and then I think 265 is a month away from that in August, the beginning of August. So I could see 265, which is the Juliana Pena Amanda Nunes card. So I could see it be on there. If anything, definitely on the September Labor Day card, which is Glover Teixeira against Jan Jovic, right there. I could see it on there. So at the latest. So definitely keep an eye out for that, because there's definitely a rematch that's going to be booked, and you're going to have an angry Chinese lady. Yeah, it's going to be gunning for her title again. So
she's going to come out guns blazing.
But that moves us to the main event of the evening, which was another two-round fight, not even, though. It was the welterweight title fight between Kamaru Usman, who defended his title against Jorge Masvidal, in which he won by second-round knockout, which was the first time, if you look right here, that Jorge Masvidal was able to get knocked out, and then it ended with that. So what's your opinion on this main event?
I mean, maybe you guys will believe me now when I'm saying that Usman's gonna start knocking people the fuck out. I said it going into that fight. I was like, either this is gonna be a Kamaru Usman knockout, or he's gonna take it by decision, one of the two. I was good for either one. I was pretty confident he had what it took to knock out Masvidal, because I mean, like I said, he's been building on this. Like, I went back and I watched the Covington fight again, because it looks like that's where they're going to go with this, is give Covington another shot. Covington hasn't really evolved as a fighter, even since his last fight, I think, with Woodley. It was the same guy who fought Usman the first time. So if you look at Usman's progress, though, like we were just talking about it during the live stream, how much he's changed since the first Masvidal fight. It was like a totally different guy out there, you know, like his striking has become so much more polished. He's way more intuitive with the movements and how to pair it with the striking. He's not quite a boxer, but he's got almost like a Justin Gaethje-esque approach to it, where he has like a lot of big movement on top of little movement, but he's, I think, more controlled with it. Cause I think Gaethje's looking more for the wrestling stuff, whereas Kamaru Usman's gotten more comfortable just standing and trading. I think he's good there. But yeah, no, this was a good showing again. We got to see kind of a little bit of everything, you know. We got to see some wrestling from Usman, which I don't think anybody's really expecting Masvidal to put up much of a defense on the wrestling. We saw that in the first round. It's like, yeah, Masvidal not really a wrestling guy, you know, it's not his thing. Yeah, Usman got some great takedowns in there.
Speaking of interactions.
Yeah. It was funny watching that shit in the slow-mo. That shit was fucking funny. some solid performance out of Usman. Good wrestling, good takedowns. Masvidal was trying to hang in on the ground. He made smart decisions about picking his shots. It was the lining up that rear cross for Usman that finally put Masvidal away. I think Masvidal was way too timid at the beginning. If he had come out a little bit stronger, he had been a bit more hungry at the beginning of the round, he maybe could have made something happen when he's in a longer fight. But Usman just put it to him from fucking round one all the way till the knockout. Like, this was all Usman.
My only rebuttal was with this was it, like, he did like knock him out, but in essence, Jorge Masvidal kind of let it happen because of him being the bonehead Jorge Masvidal that he is and not blocking any punches to the head. He basically was asking to be punched because he left his hands down at his side basically. Yep. For the whole fight. It was like, hit me, hit me, hit me. It's like, you could have easily avoided that shot. Mm-hmm. If you would have just used your brains and block.
That's the thing. He was using his brain. It's just the strategy didn't work the way he thought it was. And then he overcommitted to the strategy. That was the problem. He was trying to pull those big shots out of Usman and then slip and counter. But he wasn't slipping and countering. That was the problem.
And he was too busy. He was too busy talking. He was too busy talking. Like, if you look at this right here, this is what I'm talking about. Masvidal outstruck him. Mm-hmm. For by double, like, you had 32 strikes by Usman and 56 by Masvidal, even significant strikes. It was 31 to 21 Masvidal. They're basically even with the head shots, 5 to 7 leg body shots for Usman, mm-hmm. 3 to 4 for Masvidal. But then Masvidal had 15 leg kicks to one of Usman. And then, of course, Usman had the 2 takedowns, which equal to a minute and a half. You could have basically they both were in the first round. You could have basically said that it was kind of neck and neck in the first round, but you would have edged it over to Usman because of that second takedown. And the first one was like 20, 30 seconds. And then, but Masvidal had more output going on, and except for the takedowns going into the second round. But it's just like you said, the bonehead move where he wanted to use it to get into his head, but it didn't work. Like he got picked off by the shot by Usman, and then he got knocked down. It's like, there was so many chances before that where he almost came close to getting knocked down. And it's like, yeah, dude, once you're almost about to get knocked out, change your game plan up, change it up. Like, you're doing good right now. He was doing good. The leg kicks were very effective. Mm. He was very effective. Like, there was a couple times where he would kick Usman and Usman would kind of limp a little bit because he was getting him each time. Like, as you see, 15 of 15, he wasn't missing any. Usman was having a hard time defending those, but you had to like egg him on. You had to be like, come hit me, come hit me. And then he just didn't block anything. Like, he didn't move. Like, he just stood there. Like, the one time he was standing up there, it's like, and then he got hit. He got plucked and then he got knocked out. It's like, I was like, that's your fault. Like, you were in the fight and then you lost it. You gave him this and I'm not going to say he's going to go on like an ego trip, but now he's going to be all high on himself. Like, yo, you guys said I can't knock anybody out. I just knocked him out. Mm-hmm. I just knocked him out. And you can't say anything about it now. I will say this, though. Like, you're saying Colby hasn't evolved. He did. He did in TKO Willie by...
I saw the fight. I'm saying, like, his style hasn't changed. It's the same guy. So one of the differences, I went back and I watched both fights back-to-back, the one where he fought Usman, and then the most recent one where he fought Woodley. I watched them back-to-back like 2 hours ago. There wasn't a big stylistic difference, and that's what cost him the first fight. I didn't see it the first time around I watched it, but now when I come back and I was watching with more of a critical eye, I was like, oh, the reason Kamaru Usman really, you know, he took that fifth round was because he was working on that fifth round for 4 rounds before that. So like what it was happening is he was testing Kobe Covington for like the first round or two. And then when he got those stomach shots, he's like, all right, stomach, that works. And he was working head. Okay, head works. He got his jaw dislocated like the end of the second round. And then after that, if you were watching Usman strikes, he was mostly focused on stomach and head. Yeah. And he broke Covington down. So by the time he got to the fifth round, Covington was defending front kicks with two hands to not get kicked in the stomach. And it just was a matter of time until that broken jaw would lead him to one, two stumbles, two knockdowns, and then it was over. Now, Covington's approach was a lot different. He was more like, I'm just going to hit him real hard however I can. And he was really focused on the head, a lot of head. He was throwing kicks into the body and stuff, but he was mostly a headhunter. You saw basically the same thing with Tyrone Woodley. I mean, yeah, he was mixing in some body shots in there and, you know, he'd tie him up with the wrestling, but which, I mean, Tyrone Woodley didn't put up a huge wrestling defense, so he was allowed.
Which you didn't see in the Usman fight. Which I would say, it's not like it has to be effective against Usman because Usman's wrestling defense is top notch.
Oh yeah,
but it's just the fact of him having to think about it would have been better for Kobe Covington. Like, oh, he might do this, so Kobe could shoot for it and then do something else. That just the thought of it would have done better for Kobe. But I think
at the time, I think that's true. I don't think that's true anymore.
But with me, the big thing with that fight, which is why I think the second one's going to be good, is I felt like the fight changed once Kobe hit him in the stomach, and then Usman was like, oh, he hit me in the balls, and they gave him 2 minutes to recover from it. Because right before that, Kobe Covington was picking him apart with several shots, and then he was getting to the point where Usman was like vulnerable, and then he just goes down. He's like, oh, he hit me in the balls, and the ref stops it for like 2 minutes. And it's like, this guy got hit in the stomach, and then you stop it, and then you basically killed the momentum that he had. And then
it wasn't 2 minutes. It was more like 30 seconds, if that.
It was like 2 minutes.
Hours ago. You can't bullshit me. It was like 30 seconds. I'm watching it. Because I heard that was the complaint. Was everybody's like, oh, that was way too long. I was watching. I was like, what are you talking about?
It hasn't even been
a minute yet.
It killed the momentum that he had. And then from there on out,
he was already afraid of those stomach punches. He was already afraid of like the face punches. Kobe Covington was feeling those shots adding up. I'm not sure how much that would have made a difference because Kamaru Usman also kind of shrugged off huge shots from Burns. Like there was a few times during that fight where I was thinking like, fuck, this is over. Burns just took it. But I mean, Usman's got a chin on him, so I'm not really sure giving Covington more time to build momentum or whatever would have made that much of a difference.
We don't know that because it got stopped because of a phantom green shot. So it's like we don't know what was going to happen because the ref stopped it and then killed the momentum. It's like there's nothing worse than a momentum killer like that. That's why I want to see this. If Usman wins this like he just did in basketball, I have nothing to say then. Then my point is mute.
But well, then your point will be mute.
It probably could, but to me that was kind of that killed the fight for me. I'm like, from that point on, I'm like, oh great, like he was taking shots. This was probably his best chance, and it gets killed by a phantom groin shot. I would have felt better if Usman would have dodged it and then knocked him out, because then I would at least be like, oh, it was a knockout. At least I can say that. But
I don't think Usman was capable of knocking him out. I think that's the key difference here. Because back then, I think, one, Kobe Covington could have wrestled with him. I think he could have. Yeah. I think he was just looking for the knockout victory. You know what I mean? I think he wanted to, like, make a statement. Because there's no reason why you wouldn't at least try to take a couple of shots. Yeah. There wasn't even an attempt. And they were saying because, like, oh, they're both great wrestlers, it might cancel out. I'm like, I mean, kind of. You can even just threaten a takedown and that can shift someone's guard. If you're thinking of striking anyway, that can give you some results. So I think he was really looking more for standing and trading and knocking Usman out. And Usman at the time was still kind of shaping his striking. You could tell he was kind of shaky, but the framework for what we saw with Masvidal was there. The stiff jabs, the tight discipline control in his guard, setting up those big heavy shots from the back, you know, using the jab, using his movement. Yep. It wasn't as clean. mean, it wasn't as well executed with the Covington fight, which is why it took five rounds, but he was disciplined. He found chinks in the armor. He wore him down. And then after the Covington fight, I guess he just kept working on his striking, because then we saw him knock out Burns. We saw, was that the last fight, or was there another one after Covington?
Let me look right now.
Was Woodley? Did he fight Woodley before Burns, after Covington, if I'm remembering the order?
He took the belt from Woodley.
Okay, that's right. So Covington was his defense, and then Burns, and then Masvidal. Okay, I think that's the order, if I'm not mistaken. But
I got it up right now. He had Woodley, then Covington, then Masvidal, then Masvidal.
Okay. Masvidal was in there. That's the one I was forgetting. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So like over the process, he just got better and better and better at it. And that's what we saw tonight, was just the product of a lot of hard work. And I think that's going to be what shoots Kobe Covington in the foot in the rematch. He should have tried to leverage the wrestling when he could, because now there's a bigger threat of much harder punches coming at him in a much cleaner, more efficient way that does knock people out. Knocked out fucking Masvidal. Nobody's been able to do that. Masvidal maybe didn't have the best game plan, but even when he doesn't have a great game plan, he still has a good chin. Like, you see when he's underperforming, he can still kind of pull out at least a loss by decision, because he's got a chin on him. But Usman was a combination of him, you know, picking the right shots at the right time, and then Masvidal fucking up the right things at the right time. But
just like Masvidal does.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think it spells a lot of trouble for Covington, because now he's going to have the trouble of getting past the more refined striking of Usman. And then if he does, then he's got to deal with all the wrestling shit, which we might have seen in the first one. I'm not even sure how that would play out. I feel like they would kind of cancel each other out almost, or Usman would stuff him and put him back in striking range, because that's probably where he's going to be getting the better end of these exchanges. But I mean, I don't know. I don't really see this going too much different. I think probably Usman will finish him earlier this time around.
Yeah, I still think Usman's the favorite. I would put him at like a -150 favorite. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's too much, because I just like I said before, I think just the threat of the wrestling, even though his defense is top notch, it mm-hmm. makes the fight even better. Like, if he would have done the first fight, like you said, it would have been more to think about. I think both the guys will have more to think about now, because Covington did come out and say, that's one thing I should have done in the first fight. He did come out and say,
I heard him shit talking. Yeah.
I should have did that. That was the best. Like it's better than basketball in my opinion. But he came out and said, boom, I need to do this. So remains to be seen if he actually does it. We got to see.
He also said that in the first fight, didn't he? He said that he was going to wrestle with Usman in the first fight too, didn't he?
No, he said he was going to knock him out. That's what he said. He said he was going to stand up and trade with him.
I thought that was what the commentators were saying during the fight. They were like, he was saying he was going to try to wrestle, but we're not seeing it. I don't know what he was meaning. But I don't know. That was his opportunity out there.
I think he's going to be more prepared this time. He's still going to do his shit talking, but it's going to be a more prepared.
I don't think he was unprepared. That's what I was saying. I don't think he was unprepared, because
I think he was sort of unprepared. In every fight that he's done, he's always gone for takedowns, where his guys are, and then he throws a lot of volume. Mm-hmm. He didn't do that in this fight, because he was too caught up in the shit talking this time. Like, he's always shit talked to his opponents. He did it with Robbie Lawler. Mm-hmm. He did it with Tyron Woodley. Yeah. He did it. But like it was like the next level for him, because of everything going on, and then he just didn't do it. He went into Usman's game there and went and stand up and traded with them, which was, and he still was ahead on the scorecards going into that.
Yeah, I had him 2-2. I had him 2-2.
Well, that's what I mean. And then in the fifth round, he was winning the fifth round until the last minute when he got popped. Mm. He got popped good and then got popped again, which finished it. So. I think he needs to go back to wrestling and then the volume, and then I feel like he could win easily by decision. He just has to avoid those shots by Usman, which I
think he needs to be way more disciplined with his hands, because when he was fighting Usman, leg kicks were working, but he stopped doing them for some reason. Like, there was a point where Usman would straight up swing his leg way the fuck back just to not get kicked. And then I guess like in the third round, Covington's like, fuck it, we don't need leg kicks anymore.
I hope with the seat that he had there in this one, like he took notes on what Jorge Masvidal did with those leg kicks, 15 of 15, and then he was having the effects. But then he went away from that. He went away from that because he wanted to taunt him. But I think you definitely got to put respect on this guy's name. Mm-hmm. Personally, I think he's better than John Jones. Personally, that's what I think. I think he's better than John Jones. Everybody would say, well, John Jones has defended his title 10 times or whatever it is, 10, 11 times. But it's like there's no accountability with John Jones. Mm-hmm. He's not even – when was the last time he fought? Like 2 years ago?
Right.
He all this time he's missed in the past 5-6 years, he could be well ahead the greatest MMA fighter of all time with so many title defenses, but his octagon shit like kills him. The DUIs, the steroids, time away, they just came out. Somebody came out like, which was to me very idiotic. Well, I know you heard, but they asked John Jones about the fight, and then with the Francis Ngannou, he said it's probably not going to happen because I want $30 million for the fight, and then Dana White came and said I offered him $10 million, and he said no, he wants 30. So then it's at a stalemate. Somebody came out and was like, well, dude, if you would have offered both fighters, no, I think it was Jake Paul. was like, if you offered them both $10 million. For the fight, you would have a fight booked right now. And it's like Dana White just came out and said he offered him $10 million, and then John Jones said he offered him 10, but he wanted $30 million. So obviously he offered him 10. It's just that John Jones wants $30 million, and that's his price. And he is worth the money, but it's like a guy that hasn't fought in 2 years. How are you going to give him $30 million?
I mean. It depends.
And he's not even the champion.
Yeah, that's going to make a ton of money. That's part of it. But I mean, I there's no guarantee he hasn't been training, you know, because I think that's what people are afraid of. Like, oh, we're not going to get a good performance. Well, I mean, maybe he's not McGregor. Like, the reason McGregor wasn't training because he had all that business shit going on. John Jones doesn't got no business shit going on. It's just he's just out there living his life. He's training. I guess. Because what is he going to do otherwise?
Guess what happened today? He parted ways with his management company.
Oh, did he? Well, that's probably a good idea. That's smart move. I think his management company was shooting him in the foot on a lot of cases. But I don't know. Kamaru Usman versus John Jones. They're similar. I think in John Jones in his prime is a hair ahead of Usman because of the striking. He's as powerful, but he mixes it up more. Usman is stepping into striking. He's made tremendous progress. Like from where he was to where he's at, it's a world of difference. And now he's really stepping into the role of like a big power striker in his division, a very technical striker, especially from where he started. I think he still has a way to go before he's comfortable mixing it up like John Jones does. Cause we even saw like, he's not even great at defending leg kicks, much less throwing them, you know? So I think that would be the next step for him is throwing in more elbows, throwing in more leg kicks, throwing in more knees. Cause right now he's really all about the hands, and that's great. You can go a long way with hands. We see that from like Piotr Jan. You can go a long way with some good hands, but I think if he gets more diverse in his tools, then there'll be no question, you know? Yeah. He's got the wrestling, he's got the ground game, and he's got all the same tools that John Jones has. Yeah, that would be the thing to put him over the edge, you know? Give him a year and a half, 2 years, keep refining his game. I think he'll catch up, no problem.
Yep.
Who the fuck's going to challenge him in the division? Like, we're running out of people.
Well, we do have Luke Kay and Stephen Thompson, so.
Two.
Whoa. There's a guy like way back that's just coming back now that I could see beating him, but
Muhammad could maybe give him a run for his money if he could get.
I'm not even talking about him. I'm talking about Chimat Chimay. whatever, however you say his name.
Chelsea, what?
Kamchat Chimeth.
I have no idea what the fuck you just said. I'm looking for the name on the rankings. I'm like, I don't see anything that even looks remotely that.
I'll bring it up right now on my other screen.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Is he below top 15? Because that might be why he's not here.
Right here.
Oh, boy. Kametsa.
Exactly.
Chimiev. Like Chimichanga, but then it's Russian at the end.
But he's the one that had the COVID. He was supposed to play Leon Edwards a couple of times, and then COVID killed that. And then now he's coming back. I'm not sure who he's fighting yet, but he's at the 14th spot right now, I think. 14 or 15.
That is Sean Bradley followed by Robbie Lawler.
Sean Brady?
Brady, yeah.
Okay, then. But then he must have got moved out because of inactivity, because he was at the 14 and he was getting a shot number 3 ranked Leon Edwards. So that shows you at the time how highly that they have with him.
They did another Bilal Muhammad, like challenging a 3-spot sort of situation. They did that.
Well, no. The only reason Muhammad was there was because he was replacing him.
Oh, he was the guy who stepped in. I see. Okay.
He stepped in for Shimov. Yeah, because of the COVID issue. Yeah. but this guy
doesn't have enough vowels.
This guy is probably going to be give him a year, and now he's come back. He's probably going to fight a couple times. That from the what I've seen him, he's another guy with the Sambo. Mm-hmm. He's just a beast. Like
that would be interesting to see the striking,
the Sambo, and then just the moving forward. It's just like all those guys, like Khabib and all of them. He's the same specimen.
Yeah, that flavor,
in itself. But like he was just like in the matchups that he had, he was just dominating his opponents.
Right.
It was 15 to 20 range, but I've never seen a guy dominate like he did. And I felt like if he would have done that to Leon Edwards, I would be like, damn, I'm afraid to see what would happen if it was him and Usman. I know Usman's great, but like that's a matchup that would make money because it would be so unexpected. There would be no shit talking. It'd just be two guys going at it, like balling out. And I think he's going to be somebody for Usman to look out for in the next year or two, because I thought it would have been now, but by then he would have had 2 fights by then, but because of COVID, it cost him the past 5 months of his career. So
that sucks, man. That sucks. Yeah.
But now he's back to training and he's eyeing July as his next fight.
Interesting. So, who's he up against in July? Have they booked that yet, or is he just saying that's when he wants to go? Because it seems like most of Usman's opponents, I'm just kind of going down the list here, he's fought pretty much everybody in the top 4 for sure. Has he done Maya Magny? He fought Woodley. Chisia? Has he fought Chisia? I can't fucking say that name.
He hasn't fought him.
Okay, he hasn't fought him. Has he fought Damian Maya?
I don't know.
It doesn't sound like it's happened. I know he hasn't fought Magny, has he? Magny's too new. I don't think he's gone up against Magny. But he's pretty much done the top 4. Yeah. Steven Thompson, Vicente Luque are the next 2 who I would see conceivably being in line.
Right, and Thompson is booked against Burns.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
And Luque isn't booked against anybody, but I thought they would have done Luque and Covington, but Covington's going to get the next shot. So I'd be interested to see what they do with Luque then. Do they book him against Masvidal? Do they wait and then have him wait a while? What do they do?
Like, what's Leon Edwards up to? Is he floating around or is he booked?
Leon Edwards is fighting May 15th against Nate Diaz.
Oh, right. That's a fucking matchup. Yeah, I forgot about that. That's
This is how stupid it is. No, this is I can one up that. This is how stupid that matchup is. It's the co-main event. It's not even a title fight, and it's going to be 5 rounds.
Why?
Because they decided that it was going to be the first co-main event non-title fight to be five rounds.
Well, okay. I guess that's what Diaz is a glutton for punishment.
That's
getting worked over, I guess. that's going to happen later.
It makes me happy.
Oh, God. That's
okay, so he beat Masvidal. He beat Burns. Mm-hmm. Beat Covington, Woodley. He's beaten Rocky Dos Anjos,
he moved over a weight class. Yeah, he went down. Sorry, he went down.
He beat Damian Maia.
Oh, he did beat Damian Maia. Okay.
Yeah.
So I get the 8th spot. So I mean, we're running out of fighters here. You know,
he beat Sean Strickland. He did beat Leon Edwards. Yeah. Back in 2015.
Back in the day.
I think that was the last time Edwards had lost. Was that
interesting? Okay.
That's it.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got a pretty clean sweep all the way down to the almost the 10th spot. Neil Magny, Michael Chiesa.
Well, he didn't. Luque. He didn't.
Oh, Vicente Luque. Those are the four guys.
And Thompson.
Haven't stepped in. So, yeah, I got kind of Thompson. Four guys: Thompson, Luque, Chiesa, and Magny, all the way down to the top 10.
Okay, so you got four guys. So he has almost half the top 10 that he hasn't defeated.
I mean, some of those I'm not super worried about, but I'm not worried. Give him a shot anyway. Fuck it.
I'm worried, but I would be even. They're friendly. They're not like they don't hate each other, but I would like to see that Luque Usman fight because of Luque's style.
Yeah,
would be well because he's like I wouldn't say kickboxer, but he's a stand up. And he's called the Silent Assassin for a reason.
Interesting. Yeah. What's interesting is all these matchups that Usman's kind of burned through in these top 10, they don't have like radically different styles in terms of like if we matched up a guy like Chimev, the Sambo guy, that's a very different flavor of wrestling.
That's a very off
that'd be a whole training camp just for that. And you go to Russia like Rocky style, live in a log cabin and lift rocks for like 6 months.
And just like Khabib, like he uses your weight against you, pushing you forward, and that's how he gets you down. And then his hands are like fucking rocks. He won two of his three fights by KO, and then the other one was by like a rear naked choke. So he can take you down, he can like knock you out, and he can submit you. So it's like that would be like money for a fight against Usman because you've got people that would back it. And then just like I'm just telling you this right now, just because Usman has Francis Ngannou in his corner, wouldn't it be funny if this Chimov guy was like, "Hey, guess what? I'm gonna have Khabib in my corner." because right now Khabib's the money coach right now. He's popping up everywhere. Like he just popped up in Atlantic City here for PFL. Yeah.
Nice.
They had four main card fights on Friday. Three of them were upsets. The only one that wasn't an upset was the Amavlik guy who had Khabib in his corner, and he took down the guy at will. And dominated the fight. So I'm just saying.
It'll be interesting to see over time how the fighters neutralize the Sambo thing. That's becoming a big threat in every division, really, that it's coming up like the bantam weights, you got the light heavyweight, or no, not light heavy, the lightweights. Maybe potentially we'll see something in the heavy and in the welterweights. Nothing really in the hold on. Middleweights. Akhmedov, is he a Sambo guy? I feel like I remember him doing some Sambo shit.
Oh, you mean Islam Makhachev?
Omari.
I know in late heavyweight they have Ankalaev.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Ankalaev. Yeah, he's a Sambo.
Ankalaev, what it is. Yeah, because he's one of them.
For sure,
they got in like all three, four promotions. They run 20 deep.
It looks like the heavyweights are pretty devoid of any solid Russian fighters right now. but not that Sambo style. But like some of the most packed divisions, though, they're getting cornered by these Sambo guys. It's gonna be a big thing. They got to learn how to counter.
All I'm gonna say is that's what is lightweight. The lightweight lost Khabib, but then they gained Islam Makhachev,
right.
who is under Khabib.
It's baby.
So it's like damn. We just got rid of Khabib, but then we gained this guy. So we don't.
He's not even really that different from Khabib. His style is pretty much the same thing. So it's like, well,
the only difference is he's not champ. That he's at that cusp of top 10 spot. So
he's just training so that he can beat whoever takes the belt between Olivier and Chandler. That's where he's at right now. He's still just training, working his way up to get the belt from them.
Yep, but we're looking forward to that, but this is the end of the UFC 261 recap show.
It took longer than I thought. We actually kind of dragged that shit out. That was nice. That was good.
Yeah. But, hey, if there's something that we can do best, it's dragging out a show longer than what we think it is going to be. Because and how crazy of a card was. But just like I said before, it was great to see in the crowd there. And just like this picture shows, you see the crowd there and you see reactions there. Nothing's better than to see these guys freaking out over a crazy KO or knockout, which there was two of them, not one, but two, in the co-main event and the main event of the evening.
About this card was fucking bonkers. This is going to go down as like one of the big cards that everybody talks about. Like they're going to archive it on UFC Fight Pass as like a classic fight card. But he's like, this was a banger. This was holy shit. This is really good.
like this was so good. You could do this whole thing in an hour and a half. That's how great this card was. Usually it's like 3 hours. They're like decision. Yeah. No, this was medical stoppage, KO. Yeah. Boom. Like it was like that.
I was home by like 11. It was great. Like I was home before midnight.
Yeah. It was great. But you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Everybody I talked to enjoyed it. But like you said, it was probably one of the best cards that we've seen in the past few years, bar none.
Man, it's going to be hard to top this one. It's going to be hard. That's the thing. I was like coming into this one. I saw like the title fights. So I was like, all right, there's some good ones here. There's probably some better ones they could make, but this one will be good.
Maybe one of them will be good and the other two will be like, decisions. But no, this was all three, not even past round two. We were lucky to get past round one in them.
Right.
And then we had the two crazy medical stoppages. So it was stoppages along the way. Like even on the prelims, we had a couple of good stoppages. So this card was four stoppages. I think there was only two or three decisions in the whole card, and there was like 14 fights, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So, that's good to know. But once again, this is Cage My IQ, the best place for MMA content. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. And then don't forget to subscribe to both Twitch and YouTube, because that's where all of our content is. If you want to check it out, go to the YouTube page with all of our content. Let us know what you think in the comment section, and we're trying to get back to you because we're pumping out content almost every day. But once again, my name is D-Bake. This is my co-host, Miles, and you guys have a wonderful rest of your night.
See you guys. Take care.
Yep.
Thank you for watching this episode of Cage My IQ on the Sports Box. Please remember to follow us on all of our social media outlets. On Facebook at Sportsbox Show, Twitter at Sportsbox Show, Instagram at The Sportsbox Show. Find us on YouTube and join Outside the Box, our Facebook sports discussion group. The Sports Box is brought to you by our sponsor, Showcase Sports in Hamilton. Showcase Sports for the elite athlete. And also our friends over at CrowdPlay. Download the free CrowdPlay app today and use promo code THEBOX at sign up for 10 free points. Thank you for joining us.